Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 9, Text 46. Yat utaham tvaya prishto. Yat utaham tvaya prishto. Vairajat purushadidam. Vairajat purushad idam yatasitad upakshyaste yatasitad upakshyaste prashnan anyamscha krishna saha prashnan anyamscha krishna saha Yat utaham tvaya prishto Vairajat purushadidam Yatasitad upakshaste Prashnan anyam sri krishna saha
Vaishnavis.
Yat, what, uta, is, sorry, is however, aham, I, tvaya, by you, prishtaha, I am asked, vairajat, from the universal form, purushat, from the personality of Godhead, idam, this world, yata, as it, asit, was, tut, that, upakshyaste, I shall explain, prashnan, all the questions, anyan, others, cha, as well as Krishna Saha in great detail. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O King, your questions as to how the universe became manifested from the gigantic form of the personality of Godhead, as well as other questions, I shall answer in detail by explanation of the four verses already mentioned. Purport. As stated in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this great transcendental literature is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge, and therefore all questions that can be humanly possible regarding the universal affairs beginning from its creation are all answered in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The answers depend only on the qualification of the person who explains them. The 10 divisions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as explained by the great speaker Srila Sukadeva Goswami, are the limitation of all questions. And intelligent persons will derive all intellectual benefits from them by proper utilization. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, ninth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Answers by Citing the Lord's Version. Om Gana Tamidam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dirati Swaparantikam. So Srila Prabhupada is saying here in the purport that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Nigama Kalpataro Galitampalam Sukamukad Amrita Drava Samyutam Pipata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Mahur Ahur Rasika Bhuvi Babukaha. That it's recommended in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam that intelligent people should really try to get seriously into studying the Srimad Bhagavatam because it's the ripened fruit. It's the most important of all the Vedic literatures, and there's great benefit to be derived as a result of studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. A little later on, a couple chapters more forward in the Bhagavatam, there's another verse, Krishne swa damo pagate dharma ginadi bi saha kalona sam drusam esha puranarko denoditaha. And it compares the Bhagavatam to like the rising sun, you know, that will bring light to dispel the darkness of ignorance of the age of Kali. So, yeah, this is really important because we are living in troubled times. And, you know, people don't know who to trust anymore, who to believe. I mean, it's not a new thing that people don't trust politicians who are generally lawyers. The word lawyer is almost synonymous with liar. That's been going on for a while. But now people don't trust doctors. You know, I mean, I remember when I was younger, a doctor is somebody you trusted. They had at least that facade or, you know, there was the idea that doctors are, they're in it. It's some altruistic thing about that, being a doctor. You know, they have to take that oath, the Hippocratic oath, and it says that they're going to be interested to help the patient. So, but even that's kind of falling by the wayside. Now, that's a big part of the reason why there's this big controversy about vaccination and not vaccination. People don't have the same kind of trust in the medical profession that they used to have. Somebody was telling me just the other day that this is the first vaccination that people haven't welcomed. Why? Because there's a lack of trust. The amount of trust in the medical profession is in decline. Because a lot of people are perceiving them as just money-hungry businessmen. Not all of them are, of course, but, you know, that's probably due to the contamination of the age of Kali that's there. And as a result, people are, you know, they're backing off. They're shying away. We don't know what to believe what you're saying. How do we know what you're really up to, you know? You're telling us we need to get this. Well, maybe we do, maybe we don't. Yeah. Anyway, that's a big part of the reason. So the Bhagavatam is, as stated in that verse, is the light. You know, it's like the light. Light is welcome. I know in the morning I go up to chant my rounds on the roof of the Trader Joe's parking lot, and this time of year now, for the first half hour or so when I'm up there, it's dark. It's completely dark, and it's depressing. You know, it's just a natural thing. But as soon as that light, this first light comes in the sky and it starts, you know, getting more and more light, just, it's not like I tried it, just immediately, it's automatically you feel like, thank God, some light, you know. It's just an automatic natural feeling. It's the same thing with the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a torch bearer, it's light. And when people read the Srimad Bhagavatam, people, as Prabhupada said here, intelligent persons, you know, who are, you know, looking for something, they're seeking knowledge of the absolute truth, they're looking for some truth about life, when they read the Srimad Bhagavatam, they'll be able to appreciate that, yeah, here is a philosophy that makes a lot of sense, that answers a lot of questions, if not all my questions, and it really seems like this is something I could maybe take shelter of. So that's what's meant by light. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, when you are enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then your knowledge will reveal everything, just like the sun lights up in the daytime. So a fortunate person studying Srimad Bhagavatam, they feel it. Well, yeah, this is now life is making sense. It's all making sense now, at least more sense. I got a handle on things, something that is telling me what's going on here, what this experience of being alive as a human being is all about. This book makes some sense. But there's a challenge. I won't say it's a problem. It's a challenge. The challenge is that simultaneously, while you come in contact with a philosophy that's presenting a very comprehensive, believable, sensible picture of reality, worldview, simultaneously you're coming with a contact with a lot of descriptions of a lot of phenomena which are like bizarre. I mean, really like inconceivable. I mean, just to give one example, practically there's almost an example on every other page of the Bhagavatam. Just off the top of my head, one example that in the middle of Bhumandala is a golden mountain that's 250,000 miles high, shaped like an ice cream cone. You know, that's just one. I mean, you can just go on and on and on. So how do you deal with that? You know, it shouldn't be a stumbling block. And I'll explain why. This is my attempt at how I explain it to myself. Everything's inconceivable. Everything's inconceivable. I'm sitting here talking right now. I have no idea how I'm doing this. I have no idea how the thoughts are. How am I doing it? How am I thinking these thoughts? And how all of a sudden are these thoughts expressed in words? And it's coming out of my mouth. I don't even know how it's happening. And you're hearing them, and it's making some sense to you, I hope. And maybe you'll respond to it later. It's totally inconceivable. When you stop and think about it, everything is inconceivable. It's just that the inconceivable stuff that we're familiar with, we call reality. And the inconceivable stuff that we're not familiar with, that's... If it's presented in a book like the Srimad Bhagavatam, you tend to think, oh, that's mythology. But no, it's all inconceivable and it's all understandable, but you have to be prepared to do the work. I'll give another example, a first example. I remember when I was a kid, I took accordion lessons, you know? And so part of that, you had to learn how to read sheet music. How many people here know how to read sheet music? Just out of curiosity. Sir, you don't know how to read sheet music? You're a great harmonium player? Anyway, so I remember seeing sheet music that was, you know, because when you first start off, it's real simple. The sheet music you get is just like a few notes on the, you know, I don't even forget what they call it even now, but a few notes on the thing. But when sometimes, you know, I see a piece that was, an advanced piece, and you see the sheet music for it, and it's got like, dozens and dozens of notes, and they're all kind of like piled up one on another. And I remember looking at those and thinking to myself, what? Nobody could play that. You can't fool me. There's nobody that could play that. But people could play it. You know, I mean, it's just you have to do the work. You have to keep going for the lessons and keep practicing at the level that you're at, and just work with the teacher. And in due course of time, might be 5 years, 10 years, whatever, you stick with it, you'll be able to play that, as inconceivable as it might seem to you at the beginning. Same thing with, I remember when I was young, looking at opening up a math, like a calculus textbook, and it had all these formulas that would, you know, with all these different, what do they call them? Symbols, yeah, symbols. And I was just like, what? Get out of here. This can't make sense to anybody. I was, you know, you feel like that. That's the gut feeling. There's no way this could possibly make sense to anybody. Who are they trying to kid? But they're not. It does make sense. It makes perfect sense to somebody who's advanced in mathematics. But as I said, you gotta be prepared to do the work. If you're not prepared to do the work, might as well forget about the whole thing. Here's another example. Imagine you want to be a pilot. You learn how to fly. Okay, so you go to flight school, and you sit in the classroom there, and you learn all the different things about flying an airplane. And you know, so you're ready to go out and give it a whirl. So you're in your plane there, and you decide, okay, you know what? I know in the class they told me that you got to go taxiing down the runway, depending upon the plane, you got to be at least between 150 and 200 miles an hour. In other words, in order for the plane to take off, it has to be going that fast. That's the takeoff speed for different planes. But you think, you know what? I know they said that, but I don't feel like going that fast. I think I'll just go like 25, 30 miles an hour. I feel a lot safer, or a lot more comfortable. Let's use the word comfortable. I feel a lot more comfortable taxiing down the runway at 25, 30 miles an hour rather than at 150 miles an hour. So I'll do that, and I'll take off. You might as well turn around and go back to the hangar. Take the plane back to the hangar. You're not getting off the ground. You know, you have to go at least 150 miles an hour. Otherwise, there's not enough air going over the wings to give you the lift. See? So it's the same thing in Krishna consciousness. It's the same thing advancing in Krishna consciousness. You got to be prepared to do the work. You got to be prepared to taxi down the runway at least 150 miles an hour. Otherwise, you're not going to take off. See? I mean, you know, you could piddle around and just do your thing in the plane and just move around down the runways, but you're not going to take off unless you're prepared. So it's the same thing. It's, you know, everybody can understand the analogy. You have to be prepared to perform the austerity. You know, to rise early in the morning. That was like a must for Prabhupada. You know, rise early in the morning by 4 o'clock the latest. Sometimes it said 3:30, but okay, 4 o'clock. Bathe, put on clean clothes, come to the temple, chant, you know, 10 Mangalarti, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Routine work, Prabhupada used to refer to it as. And then beyond that, you have your service. So unless somebody's prepared to do those things seriously, you're just kidding yourself. It's like the guy in the airplane who's thinking he's going to be able to taxi down the runway at 35, 40, 50 miles an hour and take off. You're not going to take off. You got, in order to take off, in order to actually advance in Krishna consciousness, you got to be prepared to do those things. Then you're taxiing down the runway at the speed you need to be to take off and start lift, elevating. See, when you take off, the plane starts elevating. And the same thing in Krishna consciousness, when you prepare to perform the basic austerities, then you take off and you start elevating. And then you start understanding these things. You know, one by one, everything will start getting revealed to you. And you start understanding more and more all the different things, that inconceivable things that you are coming and confronted with when you're reading the books become less inconceivable. And you start being able to appreciate, I can understand how that makes sense. Yeah, I can understand how that could be. And then eventually you even get realization. It goes from being an intellectual appreciation or an intellectual conviction to an actual experience. It's an experience for you. Yeah, I know that's true because I'm experiencing it. I'm experiencing just like I'm sitting here talking. I'm experiencing that the Hare Krishna mantra is non-different from Krishna. I'm experiencing that the deity is Krishna, et cetera, et cetera. That's when you've made it, when you hit the topmost platform, prema bhakti, like that. For Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness was an intellectual conviction, but it was more than an intellectual conviction. For Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness was an experience. He was experiencing Krishna consciousness. It was beyond an intellectual conviction. But that's a good, you know, step in the right direction. So that will happen. But as I said, we have to be prepared to do the work. So Prabhupada mentions here in the in the purport about, here's an interesting sentence. He says, the answers depend, all the questions are answered, he says, by the Srimad Bhagavatam. But he says, the answers depend only on the qualification of the person who explains them. So I guess he's referring to the, you know, spiritual master, how important it is to have a good guide, a spiritual master. So in other words, so two things are important. The Bhagavatam is important, you know, to actually have the Bhagavatam, parampara, bona fide Bhagavatam. But in that sentence, I think Prabhupada's indicating that you also have to have a bona fide teacher. You have to have a bona fide coach to help you. And once again, here's an analogy to help understand that. Going back to the roof of the Trader Joe's parking lot, this morning I was up there and I was and it was kind of cloudy, but in one part of the sky, I know where the sun's going to rise because it comes up in the same place every morning, maybe like 1 degree further to the west each day, okay? But because it was kind of overcast, so what was happening was about 30 degrees to the east of where the sun was going to rise, it was very light in the sky. It was bright, you know, it was light, red, and where the sun was actually going to rise was just dark and gray, totally overcast, no light at all. So I was kind of just fantasizing. Imagine if I had, say, Buck the Devon up there with me, you know, somebody inexperienced, an inexperienced sunrise watcher. They might think that, oh, the sun's going to rise from over there. Look, obviously it's going to rise from over there because, look, there's the light. You know, and the place where you're saying it's going to rise is totally dark. But no, they'd be wrong. You see? But it's easy to understand how somebody could think like that. I could easily understand how you could think like that, Bhakti Devan, because, you know, it's all light over there and it's all dark where I'm saying it's going to come up. So in the same way, but the fact of the matter was, it came up where I said it was going to come up from, because that's the science. So in the same way, somebody's approaching Srimad Bhagavatam. What are they going to be attracted to? They're going to be attracted to the Rasa Lila. They're going to be attracted to, you know, the 10th canto or some other far out pastime. But they, you know, that could be not good. You know, you have to have, if you have a coach, if you have a bona fide spiritual master, he's going to tell you, okay, look, you know, you could check that out, get some inspiration. But really what you need to do is start here and pay attention to what I'm, trying to direct you to. First canto, second canto, the basic philosophy. If you do like that, then you're going to be okay. But if you think you know it, and you don't need, you know, you disregard what the spiritual master is, trying to teach you, then you're going to be misled. You're going to get confused. You're going to get bewildered. You're going to think Srimad Bhagavatam is some sort of sex literature. That could happen, you see. So that's, I think, an example of what Prabhupada means here by that the answers depend only on the qualification of the person who explains them. Just like with anything. I mean, probably we all remember from when we were in school. You have to have you're trying to learn something, pretty much anything, and the teacher is important. The teacher is important. The teacher will, you know, knows what the stumbling blocks are, what the pitfalls are, and is able to get you past those. And if you think you could learn it better without the teacher, generally, at least what happened to me was you just get frustrated and give it up altogether. You see? So that's the importance of the Bhagavatam, and as Prabhupada says here, the answers depend only on the qualification of the person who explains them. So you need both. You need the Bhagavatam, and you need the bona fide spiritual master, and of course you got to bring to the table yourself a willingness to do the work. And if you've got the combination of those three things, you got a good recipe for success in spiritual life. You know, a willingness, be prepared to come and perform some tapasya. If you don't have that, forget it. That's just, you know, you're just kidding yourself. But if you have that, in addition to that, you have the Bhagavatam and you have a bona fide advanced devotee to help you, guide you, direct you in your Krishna consciousness career, you know, then you have a very good shot at making a spiritual advancement and advancing nicely in Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Archidapu. Yeah.
It's important. The speaker has to indicate who they want. Not
oh, sorry.
Somebody. No, I'm not saying because other people are pointing around. It's not up to them. It's up to the speaker. Thank you for a nice class and nice analogies. You're an analogy, Raj. You always come up with all these nice analogies. So this last point about teachers, you could go a little deeper because it's not just a teacher who knows the subject matter, but also the character of the teacher. And I'll give you an example. When I was in, I learned calculus as a junior in high school, a little bit accelerated. And we had a brilliant teacher. The guy was brilliant. He wasn't a math teacher. He was a mathematician. He was teaching from his head. He didn't need a textbook. You know, he taught all the most advanced concepts straight from his mind. But character-wise, you know, back then, teachers were allowed to smoke on campus. So he was a smoker. You could smell alcohol in his breath. Who knows what else he was doing. The guy was practically always intoxicated. You could see it. But he was such a brilliant mind that he could teach calculus straight from his head. He didn't need a textbook. But spiritual knowledge teacher is not like that. The character, Prabhupada pointed out repeatedly, is as important as knowing the subject matter. You have to have the character. Otherwise, what you're saying is not going to produce the result that we want on the spiritual path, which is for the student to become purified. If the teacher is contaminated, then even though they know the subject matter, just like Bhagavad Gita, there's so many Mayavadis who know the Gita, all 700 verses. I've had experience of that. You test them anywhere you want, any chapter, any verse, they know it. But they don't believe in Krishna. They think Krishna is just some figment of somebody's imagination. So that's useless. They know the subject, but they don't have the proper character. So the seed doesn't get planted, what to speak of fructifying.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Such a Norku.
Thank you, Viripupati Prabhu. Beautiful explanation and analogy you made. You were mentioned at the beginning that there's a lot of problems, a lot of troubles, and nobody to trust, practically speaking. Doctors, you mentioned doctors, lawyers, and so many other things. And not surprisingly, but even within the spiritual realms, there are certain things. And I just want to share with you and all of you that Uddhava himself in the 11th canto Srimad Bhagavatam expressed that to Lord Krishna, which is the best teacher to explain. And he said, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Krishna, the learned sages who explain Vedic literatures recommend various processes for perfecting one's life. Considering these varieties of viewpoint, my Lord, please tell me whether all these processes are equally important or whether one of them is supreme." He said, "My dear Lord, you have clearly explained the process of unalloyed devotional service by which a devotee removes all material association from his life, enabling him to fix his mind on you." Then, this is Krishna now. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, 'My dear, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke to the Vedic knowledge to Brahma because I myself, under religious principles, enunciated in the Vedas." And then it goes on and on. And to the point that describing, you know, like all the manus and all the... I'm saying that after that it goes on, you know, it's a long Krishna explaining that how the universe was populated with different living entities and personalities in charge, and each one of them proposed something that suits to the understanding or the level of consciousness to that particular group. So sometimes, you know, even ourselves, we experience, we try to give this so elevated knowledge to people, and that is, no, this is not for me. And he's just like, "Well, yeah, that's right, actually. You're not ready yet." You think like that. But out of kindness sometimes, Srila Prabhupada's kindness to come, we go there and we try it. It's like a risk. Sometimes even people, I talk to some of them, and says, "What are you giving these books to these people?" You know, like from the Indian background, knowing about the elevated purpose of these books. But then at the same time, you have to say, listen, It took a compassionate soul who saw the need, and he brought it here, and that's Prabhupada. So we're taking the risk in that. So the point well done about your class, about doubts and confusion, but you have the right person, like Krishna and his pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada. So I just wanted to say that. Maybe you can expand.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's kind of like, that's the responsibility, the challenge and the responsibility that one has to accept if they want to go from Kanishtadhikarya to Madhyamadhikarya. Madhyamadhikarya has to try to figure out a way to get presented so that people can relate to philosophy. Actually, in one sense, everybody is a member of the Krishna consciousness movement. I'll support my statement with by something from Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text 3, Prabhupada says in the purport, he's talking about how, Krishna's talking about how yoga is like a ladder. You know, makes that comparison to like a ladder. Elsewhere in the chapter 13, text 8 through 12 in the purport, Prabhupada compares it to a staircase. But at least in the purport to 6.3, Prabhupada says, this ladder, referring to the yoga ladder, says, begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization and spiritual life. So in other words, everybody is on the ladder. Everybody is in the Krishna consciousness movement. Just like, here's an example. Everybody, all students are in the educational system. A kindergarten student is in the educational system. But of course, a kindergarten student is not the same as a PhD. You know, somebody's on a very low level, somebody's on a very high level. But they're all in the educational system. So in the same way, everybody is in the Krishna conscious movement, but on a quite a lower level. So the challenge and the responsibility for the Madhyamadhikarya is has to try to figure out a way, how am I going to help this person go up to the next rung in the ladder or the next step in the staircase, because they're part of they're in the movement, and we have to. So that's an important thing. That's an important mentality to cultivate, right? If we don't do that, we run the risk of becoming, like in the material world, people are elitists. You know, my definition of an elitist is somebody who's falsely, you know, they're imagining some superiority, and they don't think they have to share their good fortune, whatever that might be, with others. They just think, no, I'm superior, and therefore I deserve to be in this. If we're thinking like that, if we succumb to that sort of thinking, then we're in big danger, individually and collectively. That's, you know, the end of the preaching, basically. So, you know, we have to be, as I said, a duty of the Madhyamadhikarya is thinking, I have to extend myself. I have to be thinking how to present this so that people can relate to it and be inspired to take to it. So that's certainly that's there, and that's a big challenge. Yeah.
Thank you for a nice class. I think that what I'm getting out of it is that, in order for, like you gave the example of taking off, which I thought was really a good example, but it's also apparent that whoever is in that position as a pilot, so to speak, that's taking off, he can only be in that position if he's a very obedient person, you know, very, very obedient to the teacher, because he's being taught by somebody to fly that airplane. If he's a proper obedient student, for him to take off is no problem. It's only for one who's not very obedient that can be a real difficulty. So I think it's kind of what I get out of it is that if you're very obedient to the bona fide spiritual master, then Krishna consciousness becomes a very easy path to traverse across. It's not going to be a difficulty. If it's not, then maybe it's more like a formality. In other words, you take a spiritual master just to have a spiritual master. And you don't really have a sense of dedication to be obedient and to really listen to the instruction and follow the instruction. And in that way, you get to the point where you should be going, and you'll understand it just by the mercy of the spiritual master. So we as devotees, we should take it serious to become very obedient. And obedient means that we try to understand the instruction of the spiritual master, just like the person who's instructing the future pilot how to run the controls. If you're not obedient, you're going to crash. If you're obedient, then you'll accomplish it. So we as devotees in Krishna consciousness, we have to become very obedient to the instruction. And we should know what the instruction is, and then we should follow it. Then it's not just a formality. Oh, I have a guru. Oh, who's your guru? This is my guru. Oh, Hari Bol. But we should actually hear and be obedient and act. And that way Krishna consciousness makes sense. And we can actually go back home back to Godhead.
Yeah, thank you. Excellent comment. Thank you. Anybody else have anything they'd like to say? Okay, thank you very much. Grunto Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.